Hello and welcome to another episode of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real World Perspectives. My name is Diana Isaacs, and I am joined by my co-host, Natalie Bellini. And we have an exciting episode. I know I say that a lot, but this one's really, really exciting. So if you haven't heard, there was a recent insulin pump approval by a company that kind of came out of nowhere, Sequel MedTech. And the new pump is called the Twist. And what's really exciting, I know Natalie and I are super excited about, is that it's planned to work with the Tidepool algorithm. So with us today, we have a very special interview. We've got Dr. Alan Lotman from Sequel MedTech. And so thank you so much for being here with us today. And if you wouldn't mind just kind of introducing yourself and your background for our audience.
Sure. Well, thank you, Diana. I will try to give you a relatively concise introduction. So I'm a cardiologist by training. I was an interventional cardiologist in the New York area for several years in the late 90s, and I left practice and found my way into the pharmacy industry, largely because I was very, very interested in what we now call big data. It wasn't called that then, in population health management. And found my way into the pharmacy industry because of the real-time nature of the database, and pretty quickly got into what specialty pharmacy, which are drugs that are $10,000 to $1 million a year. And I stayed in specialty for most of the following 27 years. And the last 11 years or so, I was at CVS Health. I ran their specialty pharmacy, took a year and a half to help integrate Aetna. And then for the last 3 years of my career, I ran CVS Caremark, which is the largest PBM in the country, $180 billion in revenue, 30,000 people. We covered 110 million lives. And a lot of my goal was always to say, how do we use the real-time nature of the drug database to both make care more affordable, to make it less onerous on both doctors and patients, and we can debate how successful we were or weren't in that. And then I retired and really wanted to do something very, very much in the science and technology space. So I'd been working with Dean Kamen, the inventor, for a while, and he asked me to help join him and help launch his company. So that's how I got here.
Wow, what a journey. That's exciting. So thank you so much for joining us today. And this is really exciting, partly because, interestingly, they've kind of kept under wraps. No one really knew a whole lot about what was going on in the background. And we're very aware that that was done purposefully. And all of a sudden, there's an FDA approval for a pump that no one has really heard of before called the Twist. And it's linked to an algorithm that is near and dear to both Diana and I's heart because of the ability to titrate as low with a goal of 87, as low as 87, but also as high as 180. Can you tell us a little bit about what is different about this pump? What you know, you could have picked anything when you retire from CVS Caremark, and you picked this. So tell us a little bit more about what makes this pump so special.
So I think there's really three things that we're really focused on, right? So number one, and I'll do them in sort of reverse order. Number one is the technology is really, it is not just another pump with a motor and a gear and a syringe. This pump is fundamentally different than everything on the market. It directly measures how much insulin is delivered with each micro shot. Every time the pump actuates, it measures incredibly precisely, like tens of nanoliters precise, how much insulin is delivered every time. And because you know how much insulin is delivered, you know the time, you know the flow rate, you're not guessing, you know it. And we think that has a bunch of interesting applications in terms of certainly occlusion detection, and we can talk more about that. It's also solid state. It's very resilient. You can drop it, you can throw it. It holds 300 units, 3 cc's of fluid in a very small form factor that will be, not this very second, but very short, soon will be wearable. You can put it in your pocket. You can tuck it in your clothes. It's very flexible in terms of the wearability. So I thought the entire form factor of the pump was really incredible. The second thing that I thought was really interesting was what you alluded to, which was we decided to use the Loop algorithm as the driver of the AID. And we did that for all the reasons you just said. It's the most flexible, it's the most customizable, it allows the broadest range of targets. Not surprisingly, it was made by people living with diabetes for the community. And so now we have a scenario where people who want to use the algorithm, who maybe, were a little intimidated by the amount of work it would take to hack into pumps and get the little dongles, can now have an FDA cleared approach to that. The third thing that was exciting to me about this was the ability to bring it through the pharmacy channel. And I think the pharmacy channel creates a much easier approach of access for doctors. But even more importantly, when I talk to people living with diabetes, I always heard the challenges of the DME channel, not inherent to the DME channel, but you'd get the pump from one person, the supplies from another, the insulin from a third, and maybe the CGM from a fourth, and no one really was coordinated. So we've really decided to focus on that experience of the person using these devices, bringing it through the pharmacy, creating a single point of contact that if something's not going the way you want, we'll take care of it. So that's why I decided to do this. I mean, I love the technology, both of the device and of the algorithm, and I love the ability to bring it through the pharmacy channel.
Wow. I think you're right. I think, working with distributors can be very frustrating for both the person that we're treating, the person with diabetes, which is ultimately why we're doing all of this. But as the provider, when it's like, you need to sign this form for the third time, can you cross out the line? Can you write? Can you initial? Can you do whatever? We haven't been seen in this unit. It's like, it can be overwhelming. And the supplies are
like, one thing comes on Tuesday, and another thing comes the next Wednesday. We can line those up.
No, and you can't line them up because we started at the wrong times, right? So then do you make them wait 38 days to make it all line up at the same time, right? So all of that can be a challenge, right? That's definitely exciting.
I know the pharmacy. I mean, I'm personally very excited about the pharmacy route because we know that means people aren't stuck in these long contracts either. It's so much easier to say, let me give this a try. Someone could be using a different pump and want to give this a try and can easily without having to worry that like they've just signed their life away for 4 years.
And signed away a lot of money, right? So it's a low barrier of entry, which is good.
I know we're very curious. I don't know if you're able to say yet, but in terms of CGM partners, what can we expect in terms of which CGMs might work with this system?
So that's a really good question. There is a lot that goes into that, right? Because some of it is just, it takes time to build the connectivity and to test it appropriately. I don't know. So I couldn't tell you like which one's going to go faster. Like, what I would tell you is that if you listen to what I said a minute ago, is like, we're trying to make this as easy for people with living with diabetes as possible. So you can take away from that our goal would be to work with both of the major vendors and as quickly as we possibly can.
Excellent. That's what we want to hear, because we know that, some insurances pick one over the other now, right? And some insurances say, well, now it's Tuesday, so now you have to pick this first and this is preferred. You can still get the other one, but it's double the cost. And the person's like, look, that's reality. That is reality of practicing. So that's exciting that is the attempt. And we recognize as clinicians that sometimes the first go around isn't everything that you try. You need to get this product out, right? Yeah. And then you add to it once it's out. You don't say, we're going to wait until 2026 in order to have all CGMs in place and all, you just don't do that. It's not fair to you as a company, but it's also not fair to the patient to have to wait that long,
Well, that's right. And I think also, there's a million phrases of like, no plan survives first contact.
Right, exactly.
You really don't know what until real people really use your device in real life, then you learn that, oh, you know, I want this to go that way, and I want something else to be an extra, you know, centimeter longer or shorter. Like, that. So we want to get on the market quickly because we want to get that feedback. We want to build a we have a great device. If it needs anything, we want to do what the community needs, not what I think the community needs.
So that's a really good segue into, when are we launching? What's the goal?
Again, so that's a good question, right?
Right.
You know, if I think about it, we're trying to do two things simultaneously that are pretty hard. We're launching both a product and a company, right? So there's a lot of things that have to happen, from the infrastructure of, you know, quality management systems and CRM systems and connectivity with our CGM partners and all of those things. So our goal is to launch in the second half of this year. If you said, can you be more specific? I would, if I could, I would, but I just really don't know. And I would hate to overpromise and underdeliver.
Absolutely. I think that's a great,
right. No, that makes total sense. Along those lines, do you envision that it would, like, there might, a lot of companies do like pilot launches where they do a small territory to start with. Do you guys envision you might do something like that, or just kind of make it available?
Well, our thought was we'll definitely do a controlled launch in a relatively circumscribed area, you know, for, you know, orders of months, just, you know, making sure, again, we're a new company, right? I want to make sure I can get product from point A to point B, that, you know, the phones get answered easily and all these things that when you have a company that's running, it's easy to do. I want to be sure that we never leave someone out to dry in our haste to get something to market, right? If we have to wait an extra 2 weeks to get a better, you know, one more step of the CRM system, then fine.
So I have a few more questions actually on the kind of the form factor.
Sure.
In terms of, the initial, so what I heard you say is, like, later on, maybe more wearable, or I don't know, maybe fully tubeless. You can answer that, but I'm curious, kind of like the first edition, will there be different tubing lengths? Like, will there be shorter versus longer? Like, what kind of do you like envision for
that? So the launch product is about a 2 centimeter or 2 inch in diameter sort of circle, right? The holds 300 units. We have an adhesive in development that should be ready by the time we get to market. And we're initially, the approval will be with the Clio 90 sets, and that comes in 3 or 4 different lengths.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first. And now our goal, obviously, is to, you know, develop more options for sets, et cetera, which we'll do over the course of time.
And is the goal to have like a fully tubeless product, or is that?
No, it's a good question. I would answer that question, and I'm not trying to be coy. I think that there is, the value of being able to see the infusion site, I think is pretty big, right? In the sense that you can get a longer wear if you can see it. If it's irritated, you can see why. So what we're focused on is wearability and ease of use. And whether that is, you know, has a short tube to a separate site that you can then move around, right? Because the nice thing about a separate site is you can move the pump without losing the insulin and the amount of waste. So right now we're gonna see the form factor with you know, short tubes, and in the future short tubes, but right now it's where it is. And if you look at the market, like the last market share data I saw, tethered pumps are still 60 or 70% of the market. So I haven't convinced myself that tubeless isn't mostly simultaneous, synonymous with wearable, right? So a wearable 360 pump that you can put a hide under your clothes easily, but still have the ability to move around and have a longer wear set in the future, sounds kind of attractive to me.
Well, that's interesting, because I wonder if also tubeless is right now, I mean, pretty much the only pharmacy benefit there is. So some of the tubeless are partly because it is the only pharmacy benefit.
Yeah.
The supplies are the only ones there. So sometimes people get a tubeless pump specifically because they have type 2 diabetes, for example, and it's the only one they're allowed to have because it's the only one done through pharmacy. Right. So is that also counterbalancing that 60 to 70% tethered? Would it be higher? You know, that's just a, yeah, interesting
question. I don't know. I mean,
we'll see.
I think, you know, it's one of those questions. This is one of those questions that, you know, we think a lot about, obviously, because our friends at Insulet have been very successful. And
absolutely.
We love that form factor, right? But like when I think about it, it's, you can't ask people something. This is the sort of question you can't ask people theoretically, right?
Right.
You know, it's like, it's the old story of like, yeah, it's a very old story, but like Sony almost didn't make the Walkman, right? Because they decided who would ever want a tape recorder that didn't record. I'm dating myself, obviously. And the chairman at the time said, no, this thing is going to be a huge hit. And obviously, you know, in the 70s and 80s, it was a huge hit. So, you know, similarly with the iPhone, like we all loved our flip phones, right? We felt like, you know, Captain Kirk from Star Trek when we flipped our phone open. Like the iPhone came up and, you know, you wouldn't touch a flip phone now. So I think we'll get much more insight into what the market wants and needs once we launch, you know, a 3cc, you know, wearable, concealable, comfortable, you know, heavily water resistant, you know, device that you don't have to take off in the shower. You don't have to take off when you go swimming. So we'll see.
I love it. Well, that's a great segue into iPhone. So talk to us a little bit, if you can, about iPhone versus Android and what the plan is for launch. We know that Loop itself is iPhone compatible, but we can do APS off, you know. So where are we with that, and what do you think?
So the architecture of our device is such that the algorithm actually sits on the pump.
Right.
Pump talks directly to the CGM. So if you're away from your phone, you're still in AID mode. So I think that's good. We launched with iOS because, you know, candidly, for bring your own device when developing it, that seemed to be the easiest path, you know, with FDA. So we have the iOS app. We also have the Apple Watch, which is the ability to bolus off the watch. So you basically have three opportunities for bolus, right? You can bolus off your watch, you can bolus off your app. There's also a small button on the pump where you can bolus off the pump itself. So there's a number of ways that you can discreetly bolus. So we're really excited about the opportunity to use an iPhone app and bring your own device and really take advantage of the interoperability standards. We clearly realize that Android has now gotten, you know, to the point where the agency is comfortable with it. So we are in the process of developing an Android app to go along with the iPhone. It's not a short process, as you know, because you can see how long some of the folks take. I don't know if it'll take us that long, but we will have an Android app at some point in the future.
That's awesome. I love the direct to watch. I mean, bolusing. I think that's going to be
really cool, right?
Yeah. Do you, for those that don't have iPhones that want to use the system sooner, will you have any kind of separate controller device to
use? Well, that's a fantastic question. And again, this kind of falls in the category of I don't know right now. I don't know what, I mean, trying to get good data on iPhone penetration in specific populations, like people living with diabetes and people who are interested in an AID, is almost impossible. So I think what we'll do is we'll see. We obviously have planned for how we would solve this problem. We won't have that plan in place on launch. Broadly, we might do some interesting things for clinical trials, but not for launch. We're probably going to launch initially just with a bring your own device, and we'll see what we need as we go through the controlled launch. That's one of the things that we want to learn in that process.
So speaking of clinical trials, can you tell us a little bit about what you have planned for upcoming clinical trials?
So we're going to do two trials, you know, pretty much as soon as we can get everything together, right? You know, so one will be in type 1, which will be much more of a post-marketing kind of real-world evidence sort of trial, and one will be an IDE-controlled trial in type 2, with the intent of driving towards a basal and bolus approval in type 2. Because again, we can hold 3 CCs now. That's important, and we have some really interesting interesting development going forward that we have to again validate and prove. But to use both larger, you know, larger capacity cartridge in the same shell, so same sized outer container with bigger
insulin. Right, with a higher level of insulin volume. Right. Yep. Yeah. Great idea. Yeah. I mean, we have a lot of people with type 2 that need a lot of insulin, and that it can be frustrating for them. And the alternative is getting a U200 approved off label, and then, you know, which is a lot of work, and you never know if someone's insurance is going to change and say, okay, you can use U200 right now, but next year there's actually no way that you're ever going to get it. And now they're changing out their pumps more often, you know? So the idea that you could actually create a larger volume with the same size pump is really incredible.
The geometry was very carefully thought through, right? You know, like what geometric shape has the greatest volume for a given surface area? It's a circle. So this is round. We took a slice of the circle. And like I said, we have a prototype. It's not available yet, where we have 5 CCs in the same outer.
Incredible. Yeah.
And, you know, if you add just a little bit of depth, you could add a lot more volume. It's really incredible, actually.
That would be.
But again, awesome. Just to be really clear, if I get in trouble, 3 CCs on launch.
3 CCs on launch. Apple iPhone, Clio 90. Regardless, 300 units.
I have a question a little bit more about the Tidepool algorithm. Is it kind of what we all currently know about it, like in terms of like that glucose target being able to go down to 87? We're also familiar with kind of the different absorptions you can set. Like, is this food more like a lollipop or like a taco or like pizza? Like, are those features going to be available in here, or is this going to be some kind of modified version of Tidepool?
So it's a really good question. The technically correct answer is we took the Tidepool algorithm, we mathematically validated that the implementation that we did on our pump and the implementation that's on the Tidepool app, when you give them the same input, you get the same output. And we ran some gazillion number of data points on like a, you know, enormous like mini supercomputer and proved that to the FDA satisfaction. The app itself is virtually indistinguishable. So you can do retroactive carb adjustments as well, which I know is a, you know, as I talked to some of our clinicians, becoming more important kind of in the GLP.
Yes, definitely.
Because, you know, people think they're going to eat a lot on Monday, but, you know, it's the end of the week for them on their injection and they're not eating as much.
I love it. Yeah.
We're so excited about that because that algorithm is very customizable and we love having those options.
And I like the idea that, you know, I think people, if they're listening and they're like, oh my gosh, I am never going to do retroactive carb adjustments. You don't have to do any of that, right? The beautiful thing about the loop is that we can say, you're going to do taco for everything, or you're going to do this for everything. And then as we look at patterns, then we can say, okay, Friday nights, now you're going to do pizza, right? Yeah. On Tuesdays, you're going to always do lollipop, right? So that we can then not make this an overwhelming, oh my gosh, here's every feature and benefit, and this is what you do, and this is how you do it, and you're going to have 3 different targets on Tuesdays you're doing. Stop. We're going to start them. We're going to get them situated. We're going to look for patterns. And then you pull in those advanced features. We do that now with the AIDs that are available. But a lot of times it's like, oh, this person, she still gets low even when we set an exercise target on any pump, right? Or, oh, this person, and Loop can say, well, 180 is what we really need that, right? Like Loop gives us a little bit more flexibility in those. So as a clinician talking to other clinicians, don't be overwhelmed, be excited, because you're going to learn this just like you learned how to do your first CGM or your first other AID system. It's going to give us a little bit more opportunity and flexibility. Diana and I, who both help manage people with diabetes and pregnancy, although it's not FDA, there is no AID approved for pregnancy right now, are excited about the targets, right? We're excited about that ability to say, you tend to eat a little less carb at any one time and you spread it out throughout the day. So you might be eating a little more protein and fat and things might look more like pizza every time you eat versus a taco or a lollipop, right? So I see this as a benefit, not a cost, but don't be overwhelmed, right? To our listeners, be excited.
No, I think that's just an important message, right? Because I think when I've talked to a lot of people, you know, and again, I come from this from a perspective of, you know, somewhat naive, right? I'm a cardiologist, right? No, I know enough to be dangerous and not enough to really be that. But I realized pretty quickly that the great thing about the Loop algorithm is it lets you do as much as you want, but it doesn't require you to. And if you choose not to, you're not going to suffer the penalty of, oh, I said something and now I'm going to be, or I didn't eat it enough, and you're going to be in trouble. I have to worry about it. One of the things that I sort of thought a lot about is the sort of psychic burden of you know, managing your diabetes every day. And if you have an unexplained hyperglycemia, you know, is it because my pump isn't working? Is it because my sight is a problem? Did I not count carbs? Did I exercise, you know, incorrectly? And I think what we're trying to think about is how do we start to reduce those challenges?
Right.
Again, like this pump will alarm if the insulin's not moving, it'll alarm in 19 minutes at a normal flow rate. That's in our user guides. That is far faster than any other pump.
Right.
And so
by far. Right.
Yeah, you're not gonna go 3 hours without insulin moving. I was talking to someone who told me a story, like how you know she was, you know, the glucose of 300 as she was getting on a plane, didn't know whether the pump was malfunctioning, whether she had done something wrong, but she had to get on the plane, ended up having to use a syringe and vial on the plane, and so I think being able to like reduce one of those pieces of variability, I think is really, really important.
Wow. Yeah. What an incredible discussion today. Yeah. Diana, one more question.
Well, no, it's not a question, but I just wanted to say, I had the pleasure to hear Dean Kamen kind of talk about this because he was the creator of the first insulin pump and how.
Yes, he was.
Right. I did not realize, like, we just think all the pumps are just super accurate every pulse, but the reality is that they are pulsing insulin every 5 minutes. And sometimes it may be a little more or a little bit less. And I just think about all my patients I manage and how sometimes there's things that happen that you're like, wait, that didn't make sense based on this. And so sometimes I just wonder when it comes to the delivery of the insulin with these devices, we just assume they're 100% all the time. But I don't know that that's the case. And I think this is exciting because it's just a whole different way of delivering insulin.
I thought about it a little bit is like all of the current pumps are accurate to plus or minus 5% at the end of 3 days. And they publish trumpet curves, right, which show how long it takes them to get to that number. And let's be clear, you know, it's better than giving yourself two or three.
Absolutely.
There's no question about it, right? I think we're in a position now where if you take a step back for a second, so, well, why does it make a difference if you know how much you gave? I can't tell you it will. I have to prove it. But, like, here's a thought experiment for you. If you're an algorithm and you think you gave 0.1 units and the glucose still went up, right? Sometimes you didn't give 0.1. You might have given 0.05. You might have given 0.15. There's a certain error range within it. That is going to get incorporated into the algorithm. That inaccuracies or imprecision or kind of random variation is going to get baked into the algorithm. So what Warsaw is saying is, if you can measure more precisely how much insulin is going in, at least in theory, like I hope that people can create better algorithms. Can I promise you we're going to? No. Can I prove? No. But it's like the next evolution of pumps, right? It's the next evolution of technology. We, you know, the syringe pumps, again, plus or minus 5%. But think about it. You're moving a plastic stopper with a rubber O-ring through a plastic, through a syringe on a gear. It's moving an itty bitty little bit. I mean, it's, you know, fractions of a centimeter. There's going to be friction. It's not a reflection of the device or the mech. It's a reflection of physics. So what Dean realized, you know, whatever, 10, 15 years ago, was that the CGM world was getting better, right? And that there was an opportunity to start to get closer to where we are today, which is hybrid closed loop, advanced hybrid closed loop, kind of really having a system that allows people to manage their diabetes with much, much more easily. And he realized that having a, you know, just as an engineer, right? Or as a, he's a physicist and a mathematician, but as a, from an engineering perspective, having a more responsive pump, at least in theory, would be good. So he set about building it. Hence, we're here today.
I love it. So awesome. This has been such a great discussion today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yes, thank you so much to Dr. Ellen Lotbin, and thank you to all our listeners. That concludes this episode of Diabetes Dialogue.